Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very hard. And I know I think when you suddenly hit 50, you go, oh, this is what it's all about. This is me. This is what I've been journeying. I've been looking for you for a while. I lost you when you were a baby and I've found you again. Because I think when you look at a newborn baby, they're very authentic.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models. The women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the My Body, My Story project. And today with us, Katrina in the studio, and I'll be asking her a few questions. Hi, Katrina. Welcome to the studio. Welcome to the project. And let's start and tell us 10 facts about yourself.
Oh, welcome. Thank you for having me here today. It's been a pleasure working with you today. I was born in Christchurch in the spring of 1967. And when my mother gave birth to me, she nearly had a death experience. So I was lucky. So my mother basically, they gave her the wrong blood group.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was quite horrific. And so she nearly died. And my mother was British and my father was English. So what a combination, Church of England and the Catholic Church. My father was actually had a alcoholic problem, so I grew up in an alcoholic family and quite abusive family. And my mother, at the age of 10, left her husband, which was quite dramatic in those days to not know if we're going to have any food or anything like that. It was an amazing thing. There was always lots of problems going on in our family, and I'm a survivor of sexual abuse twice, one with a family member and one with the next door neighbour. So at the same time, and I was born with a child with complex needs. So I was told as a child that I would never achieve anything by health professions or be anything. I suspect I had, and during my time, I've had about 9 to 10 eye operations, couldn't see properly as a child, couldn't walk, couldn't read or write properly to later in life, probably to about when I was about 11 or 12. So I had very, very complex needs. I would headbutt, I would rock as a child. But I knew deep inside me that I was much more worthy than these professions were telling me. So I've gone on to do university, gone on to do everything. And I'm very, very passionate. I suppose that's where my passion comes for human rights and human dignity and respect. So much that I don't like seeing any kind of form of abuse. So currently, I'm very, very fortunate. I'm very, very thankful. I went through some therapy in my young age because I was in a domestic violence. Yeah. Ended up being in the same cycle. And so I met this amazing man. I wrote a list exactly what I wanted. And anyone who didn't treat me, red flags, I went, run. So I ran. And I met this amazing man. And I've been married to him for 27 years. He still today, when he dates me, goes and opens the car door for me. He's a real sweet. And his name's Warwick. He's really lovely. And we had 2 children together. And I'm very thankful for my life. And this is the time where I'm starting to give back. This is the time where I stop caring about what other people think about me. And I love to face my fears and challenge myself, and I love to climb mountains. So anyone who tells me I can't do something, I'll challenge you.
Yeah.
You challenge me and I'll do it.
Watch me.
Watch me. I'll grow. Yeah, definitely. So that's probably my clear determination. I'm also a very visual person, so I actually visualize myself before I actually get there. So my mind, I'm quite strong-headed. But I also listen to my instincts and listen to others, because everyone I meet has a gift, a message, and a lesson to teach me.
So you said you have two children?
Yes. They're adults now. So one's a train driver.
Oh.
And he loves it. And the other one is working in IT.
How old they are?
So one is nearly going to be 24 and one's 26.
Nice. And so what you said about challenges, that people say you cannot do it. What is your biggest challenge you completed and you're proud of?
I think probably doing university, because being dyslexic or having a learning disability and actually writing was a big thing. But I've actually, the other challenge, what I've achieved now is, which I've actually written one book, which is being reviewed and hopefully get published. It's called It's Not Okay and the Prevention of Child Sexual Abuse. So it's an interactive book for children, because I think you've got two choices in life. The way I see it, you can let your dark thoughts control you, and we all need to have dark moments in order to blossom and be appreciative. And you can let that identity be you, or you can change it. You have the power. Who controls your thoughts? I do. I control my own thoughts. People can tell me something, but I actually control my own thoughts.
But how did you reach that conclusion that you need to do this healing process, and how old you were?
I think in different stages of my life I've had to do healing. And I think it's finding someone that you really connect with, that you really trust, that you can open up to. And it's not just the therapy you might do with a therapist or a psychologist, it's what you do outside.
Yep.
Whether you're willing to do the work. So, and I always had someone who told me, write a healing letter, say the healing letter. So I was quite good. I'd write down what I want to say, actually on toilet paper, then use it and flush it and let it go. Because I don't think it needs to define your identity.
Yeah.
I don't think. The past can teach us something, but it doesn't mean that who you are today. And so I'm also writing another novel at the moment called Broken Sunflowers, which is great. And I run two businesses. So I run at Airbnb. Which is great. So we get all these people in, different things, with people from different cultures and backgrounds.
It's actually in your house.
Yeah, the back of my house.
Yeah.
You can come and stay.
Thank you.
Run a B&B, and it's called Serenity on the Bay, because we live by the beach near in Nelson Bay area, Corlette, which is a beautiful community and loving people. And then I also run a training business. So I train people to work in community services. So the Diploma of Community Services. So that can be youth, age, domestic violence, youth, children, homelessness, every form of community services. So currently I'm contracted out to an international school at the moment. So I've got a contract for 2 years with them.
But if someone wants to find you, how they can?
Well, basically, I would probably just be on RTO job lines for those. I don't need to. I'm being really lucky. I don't need to advertise because I love what I do. And people just ask me, like, this job just came about. Someone heard about me and ring up about it. And do you want this job? And I went, yep.
Yeah.
I've been always lucky to fall on my feet like that, because I think I just put out there. I think if you're going to be bitter and grumpy, and you're going to get bitterness, if you're going to change your mindset and be positive, then things are all, don't even look at it as positive, look at possibilities. What's the possibility here?
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, what's the possibility? What's the possibility? I've met you for a reason, what's the possibility where we can go?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's probably, and I've travelled lots. So in my 20s, I backpacked the world by myself, went to Europe, lots of Europe. And then my daughter, when she turned 18, we did a trip, which was amazing, for 3 months, her and I. I've just had enough of you. I love you. Well, we went off and did our own thing, but we did 18 countries.
Oh, wow.
Raising awareness for domestic violence. So I raised awareness. I ran around raising awareness and joined all these rubber crews. So I actually had a one page called Running for Love, because I love to trail run. and it brings me so much joy. And it was looking about how different cultures deal with DV and the supports, and if there are supports.
That's interesting.
It was just very, very interesting because in Morocco, it just being in 2018, it just being realised that domestic violence law was going to pass. So, you know, African countries were, you know, couldn't prosecute. And we met an amazing young woman who was doing theatre through DV, so to prevent domestic violence happening in those countries.
So you said 18 countries, which...
In Europe.
In Europe.
Yeah, Europe and Iceland and Morocco. Where else do we go? Oh, yeah, and I went to New Zealand. Where else do we go? Yeah, in 3 months. We just, anywhere that was cheap, we went. We jumped on a plane and went.
So when did you move to Australia and why did you move here?
I moved to Australia 20 years ago, and why did I move here is because my husband got a job. So I've lived in lots of I've lived in four countries and around in the world.
Yeah.
And he got offered an employment, and I thought, why not? We'll just take it, go.
Do you like it here?
Yeah, I do. I think I've found my tribe.
Mm.
So I think when you find your tribe becomes your sisters. And I think that's the greatest thing about getting that connection is actually finding your tribe. And sometimes it takes a long time to find your tribe.
That's true.
And it can be quite lonely sometimes, and it can be isolated, and it can be coming here to Australia with two young children, not knowing anybody, and everybody had their cliquey groups was really, really hard. It was trying sometimes.
Was it like, for me, it's logical that if you go and take your kids to school, then you meet parents and you get to know each other, or it doesn't work like that?
Well, sometimes it doesn't work like that because they've got their own tribes.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, you find you're trying to figure out where you belong and where you don't belong. And I think that's sometimes that can be quite hurtful and quite painful, but I think in the end you just need to keep trying.
Yeah.
And your tribe will come to you.
I agree. So what did you do to find, where did you find it?
So I found my tribe. I suppose that's why running has been so much to me. It's not about the physical exercise. It's about more the connection.
Like, yeah.
And, you know, and finding people similar-minded as me and who don't want to fit into a certain hole or betray to be a certain, you know, person. I think the greatest thing you can do for yourself is to be authentic, to be real and to be honest. And sometimes that's hard.
It's hard to understand what is authentic you.
Yeah.
To figure out yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very hard. And I know I think when you suddenly hit 50, you go, oh, this is what it's all about. This is me. This is what I've been journeying. I've been looking for you for a while. I lost you when you were a baby, and I found you again. Because I think when you look at a newborn baby, they're very authentic. They're not worried about who's who. They don't worry. They just want their basic needs.
Yeah, but okay, somebody can argue with you that, we're not babies and we're more than just basic needs. And that's for me, it's always a question how this transformation happens. And it's the long, psychology question, long time ago, started asking that. Is that your genes? Or it's your upbringing in the family and society. So basically it's both.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do without anyone. But I'm not saying with a baby, but the baby still needs the connection and still needs the love. Do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying as you grow.
Yeah, yeah.
And that always, and you lose that sometimes.
Almost every time.
So if you're not aware of it, that thing in the head.
So moving to the aging subject, as we touched it. So what does aging means to you?
Okay, so aging means to me that I'm very proud my body survived.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't see myself as 56 years old.
Yeah.
But I certainly did not want to go be like my mother, who was grossly overweight in and out. She, in her lifetime, had about 45 operations in and out of hospital. all the time.
Wow.
So as a child, I didn't know if she was going to come home sometimes. So I didn't want that upbringing for my children. And my father, he died when he was 59, so from cancer. So I saw them aging, and because I used to work in, at the age of 16, work in an aged care facility, I saw people couldn't even walk, and they were 65, 70. And so I decided I didn't want that for me. So I made the choice to respect my body. I think that's what it came down to, respect my body and feed it and nutrition it well.
Yep.
And that includes good old croissant now and then. Good croissant now and then. I mean, and not to be so restricted, because I've got a family member who's got the opposite of what my mother was, and they're anorexic. You know what I mean? So they have an eating disorder. And I think it's also dealing with your emotions as they arise and acknowledging them.
Yeah.
And not feeding the emotions, like by eating lots of chocolate or by not eating or whatever. Yeah. And I think that's how you can just age gracefully. That's what I think. And when I look at a friend of mine who's 83, and a year ago he ran 100Ks and 22 hours in the Blue Mountains. So anything's possible. And it's quite funny because he is, he's a short Italian. So when I run with him, they go, oh, who's that kid you're running with? So I'm the young one and he's the old, I'm the old girl and he's the young one, I should say. Yeah, so, yeah, I think aging is just, you just got to go with it. It's a stage of life, a phase. Eventually we're going to die, so we might as well just get on and live with it.
Yeah. So, but if you could go back to any age, what it would be, why, and what advice would you give yourself at this age?
I think it was 10 when I was being abused, sexually abused by the neighbour next door because I was wild enough. I would say learn, and my book says no. To say no, because that's what we can give the best gift for our children, is to say no. Yeah. And that's why, if I did that, but then I think that I wouldn't have written the book. So, I mean, it goes both ways. I think you just have to accept things in life having a reason, whether they're good or bad or whatever, it just happens. And it makes who you are today.
So you wouldn't change anything?
No, not really. Not really. Happened for a reason.
So if we're talking, if we move to the body image questions, my first question here is, if your body could talk, what do you think it would ask you or tell you at this age?
Now? At this age?
Yeah.
You're beautiful.
Excellent.
Beautiful. I mean, when I was probably in my 20s, I was the tall, skinny one, which can be hard reputation to live up to. You know, to fit in the tall skinny. And then I had a whole family of tall skinny sisters, tall skinny. So we were the tall skinny sisters. But that's sometimes a harder reputation to live for, up to. So not now. I just think I'm beautiful. And just to remind myself that to be kind. Kindness is the greatest thing you can do for yourself.
So what do you think are the main causes of body image issues or insecurities?
I think there could be many, many causes. I think if there's trauma, being past trauma, the social, it can be a complex issue for each individual. And I don't think you can put it into one little box. People say social media. I've heard people say social media, social this. But everyone's an individual, so it depends. How people perceive their body image.
Yep.
I think it's an individual thing. I mean, we can keep blaming social media and maybe it does have some influence, but this could be deeper. I think it goes deeper than that. And you really need to get to the core of the problem of why people are having this body image thing and why they need to use fillers and why they use it to puff their face up and why we need to produce, you know what I mean?
I agree.
You know, I think there's a lot deeper psychology to it. And I can see it as a family member who's dying now through an eating disorder. You know, it's quite horrific watching someone that you care for dying through an eating disorder. But the whole point is that she hasn't dealt with the emotions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and there's nothing you can do with, you know, a family member that's at that stage. There's nothing you can do. So you just have to accept it. And I think sometimes body image for someone who has an eating disorder or obesity or whatever, it becomes their identity. It becomes so they get some benefit from it.
Yeah.
So you have to, what's the benefit? There's got to be something. Behaviour doesn't happen for a reason.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
You know, you're getting something back from it. People going, oh, you look so sad. Oh, you could be dying, you know what I mean? So that's all I'll say.
How do you think it can affect this body image, can affect relationship in what way? And I'm talking about all sorts of relationship, like not only women and men. Yeah.
So I think if you've got body image and and how you're feeling could be, I mean, it's, as I said, it's an individual thing. But I think it puts the person at high risk of a domestic violence mm-hmm. situation. And the reason is because their self-esteem could be very, very low, generally speaking.
How you think it's, why it can put them at high risk?
Because the person obviously doesn't think they're worthy. So if you don't think you're worthy, then you attract people who are going to treat you like you're unworthy. If you're not kind to yourself and you're hard on yourself, then you're going to attract people who are going to be hard and critical of yourself. So you believe that.
So how do you overcome body-related insecurities when they come up? And has it changed with age?
Yeah, it's definitely changed with age. I think the thing is that, as I said to you before, I write a healing letter if I need to, or write down what it is, get it out to the universe and burn it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can write it on paper and let it disappear. Or you could do a pros and cons list, which means you'd write the pros or cons of why I'm thinking this. Challenge the thought. Or you could write yourself a letter and send it in the post. Now, who gets a letter in the post these days?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you could write yourself, dear such and such, if it was for you, Alex. Dear Alex, this is how I'm feeling. And you'd look at the letter and go, why am I thinking that?
Yeah.
I mean, this is you can challenge that thought. And you get this letter in this post going, oh, my God, it's a letter in the post.
Somebody's writing to
me.
Who is this person?
Yeah, so I think you can challenge the thought. Because as I said before, who creates the thought? You. Where does the thought come from? That's the deeper question.
So you said that you run, and so you probably, it's one of your way to bring yourself into a good body shape. Do you have any other ways?
I think the thing is that I listen to my body. I listen to it. So if it's feeling tired and I can have a rest, I'll go and have a rest. I think that's really important. My stress levels are probably quite low, I would say, and I'm very thankful for that. So I nutrition it the correct way, which is that there's a correct way for my body.
Mm-hmm.
That includes eating dark chocolate every day. God, it's so good. Instead of having a big whole chocolate bar or five of them at the same time. I do go in the water. I love being in the water. I'm not a great swimmer, but mm-hmm. I go into the water afterwards, the sea, which is really, really good. I do strength class twice a week.
Mm.
And I think getting me on track, because I'm running an ultra again in February, so we're doing 50Ks in one day.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I've done 100Ks before in one day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
It's mental. It's just your mental game. So
So what do you say to yourself? Like, what, I can do it, or?
No, this brain is having a thought. Because then I separate myself from the brain is making the thought happen. So this brain is having a thought, because it's just a thought. The thought will pass. So I think I've always used exercise as a form of, but I don't want to get to the point where I'm obsessed with it. Like if I didn't run today, I'd be like, yes. And I also have found a wonderful coach who keeps me on track. So that's really, really handy. I want to say to her, I don't want to train today. I don't feel like it. She goes, good.
Yeah.
She listens to you. Because it's about listening to your body.
So I wonder, you have a coach in running.
Yeah, a coach in running, and she does a coach in swimming. You can get coaches. It's called Training Peaks. Mm-hmm. So if you look up Training Peaks, you can find all the different kind of coaches for running, swimming, cycling, whatever. And yeah, and it's just they do a training program and they look at your heart rate, they look at your stress levels, they look at everything, and they change the training program to suit that. And if you're injured, I'm always rolling my ankles. And so she just changes the training program for injury. But it's quite nice because I did my Garmin the other day, said I was my fitness age was 20.
Oh, really?
Yes!
And you told me earlier that you feel like you're still 20. So yeah. You see, it's just aligned with your feel. Yeah.
So for me, it's really important having a certain amount of fitness, because then you can go and do something. And I love to climb mountains. I've climbed in the last 2 years Kilimanjaro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Africa. I went to Africa. I love Africa. So I arrived. If I'm going to do something, I've got to the stage in my life. My husband doesn't want to travel some parts, and that's okay, because he had a heart attack about 4 years ago. So I just organise it myself, and people go, oh, I want to come along. And I said, well, this is where I'm going. This is what you organise it. I'm not organising people anymore. It's too much effort. And so I did climb Kilimanjaro, which was quite amazing. But then I did Mirror Peak, which was 6,470 this year. And I'm off to Peru this time next year, to climb another 7 peak. So I love being in that meditation state for 6 hours when you're going to summit.
My last question is, what is your favorite saying or quote about being a woman?
Okay, so my last question, and I really love Brené Brown. Have you heard of Brené Brown?
No.
Oh, she's great. I belong to me, and this is true about belonging and who we really are. So it means you don't have to go and fit the whole, because if you try to fit a mold to what the group wants you, then you've lost your true, authentic self.
I agree with that.
Yeah, Brené's beautiful.
Thank you, Katrina. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and for sharing your story. And I hope that you enjoyed the day and the photo shoot. And thank you again for everything.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and I've learned so much.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a KS. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.